Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there, not just in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, I can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. We have got some massive, massive hot topics to cover. We're going to bury the lead to the very, very last because this is the most important topic. But let's get through them right now. Honda has officially joined Aston Martin for the 2025 season and beyond. Honda is or was the engine provider for Red Bull on and off for years around Formula One. Now they decide to be a collaborator with Aston Martin. I mean, is this really going to help Aston Martin in the very near future? Probably not. This is looking to be more of a long-term investment and partnership. Honda does fantastic work in the motor vehicle industry, obviously in motorsport as well. Just when it comes to Formula One, they're in, they're out. They cannot decide what the fuck they want to do. If the environmental regulations aren't quite up to their standards, all of a sudden they just cut their deal short and they're out. If they're winning, they stay. So short term, really, really good for Aston Martin. In the long term, will Honda decide to stay and make a difference? Only time will tell. Daniel Ricciardo. Okay, these are preliminary rules or rumors, but they are from sources inside Red Bull and VCARB as well, that Daniel Ricciardo will be replaced by Isaac Hadjar, a Formula 2 driver, for the next season. It is kind of just a matter of time before the contract is signed, either this weekend or next weekend. Is this bad news for Ricciardo? Yes. Is there still hope for Ricciardo? Absolutely. There is still a spot left in Kiksalba. Technically still two, because neither of the drivers have signed for the 2025 and beyond season. Horrible news for Daniel Ricciardo unless he gets that seat and kick, but really, really good news for VCARB itself. Isaac Hadjar, really solid Formula 2 driver. He's either winning Formula 2 or he'll be right up there. Really solid. He's part of the actual academy in Red Bull. So they're finally deciding that they're ready to bring up some of the juniors into the program, which is great. I think he's going to get along very well with Yuki Tsunoda. They have the same driving style, just Hadjar has a much calmer temper than Tsunoda does. I think it's going to be a good fit. I also think that he's not going to come out of the gate and absolutely either destroy or bomb in his debut year. It's going to be some consistent work. I do expect to see him within the top 10 a couple times next season. But again, it has to be official yet, but I do think this will happen within the next week or two. Qualifying hasn't even started yet, and Zhou Guanyu is going to be last, no matter what. The reason for this is he's taken a 20-place grid penalty because he has taken so many brand new power unit components. Obviously, he's breaking his limits that he has for the season. Each part equals a grid penalty. It equaled up to 20 grid penalties. Yuki Tsunoda earlier this year ended up with a 60-place grid penalty just for as many new parts that he took. Does it really matter to say at this point? No, not really. Is it slightly embarrassing to broadcast across the entire world? Kind of, sort of. It will be less embarrassing to see what he actually does with all these brand new parts. Hopefully he'll be able to get out of the bottom five during the race. We automatically know he can compete in qualifying, which he will. I just don't think there's any point in him doing it. It does have a tendency to screw up other drivers' times. We've seen this in the past. But it is Zhou Guanyu. I don't want to say that he's a horrible driver. It's just that his luck as of late has been next to nothing, we'll say. And now the news that I'm sure some of you have heard by this point, but haven't heard quite the details. Adrian Newey has officially decided what he's doing, and he's going to Aston Martin for the 2025 season. He is signing a 5x30 contract, which means a 5-year contract at $30 million a contract. All right, let's do some math here. What's 5 times 3? That's 15. He's making $150 million with Aston Martin. Now, the reason why he signed a 5-year contract, one, he likes a puzzle. He likes to be challenged. Aston Martin is definitely that kind of thing that he needs to work on that will intrigue him. The 5 years, because he himself knows this is not going to happen overnight. He's going to need a season or two or even three before we really, really see any kind of improvement when it comes to Aston Martin, just because they've got stuff down the pipeline for 2025 already. So technically the 2025 season, it's kind of a wash. It's for him to learn and tweak for 26 when the new regulations come in. And this is where Adrian Newey really, really shines in and of himself. He can take over a project and just make it his own and make it successful in literally no time flat. Now, that's not to say that the Aston Martin team they have now is horrible at their job. They just seems to be a little lost. And what better captain to bring in than Adrian Newey? In his entire career, he has won 12 Constructors Championships with the teams he has been. Why not make it 13, 14, and or 15 with Aston Martin? Why not? One of the other upgrade or bonuses for him going to Aston Martin, he has one person to report to. That is Lawrence Stroll. That is it. Lawrence Stroll owns the team. He has him to report to. It's a one-on-one back-and-forth idea collaboration, meetings, all that kind of stuff. There is no hierarchy. Well, you got to talk to this person and then talk to this person, and you don't have drivers' dads getting in the way. Technically you do, but you know what I mean? When it came to Red Bull, there were so many other pieces that Adrian just wasn't interested in, didn't want to be a part of. And Aston Martin seems to have promised him that there's no drama. You got one person to report to, do what you do best, win championships, bring Aston Martin to the lead. Now, one question I have, which I don't really understand, is that by the time Adrian Newey had stepped away from the Red Bull development, and by the time he starts with Aston Martin, it's not going to be a full year. Adrian is still technically part of the Red Bull family. Now, normally when anybody leaves one team to go to the other, they have a gardening break. Now, what's a gardening break? For those of you who don't know, it's just a fancy way of saying you have to have a full season where you're not involved in any shape or form with Formula One in person. You can watch it on TV. You can subscribe to F1 TV. You can watch it on your local broadcast, whatever you want to do. You can watch it from home. But the reason why they call it a gardening break is because they want you to play in the garden, relax, recoup, and then you come in. This also gives the ability where he doesn't have any kind of information from Red Bull that he will unintentionally or intentionally, we never know, add to or give Aston Martin an advantage. But looking at what Red Bull is doing right now, I don't think it would actually help Aston Martin if Adrian Newey came in and goes, well, they're doing this, this, and this, because we all know it's not really working out all that well. But it seems to be that it's going to be close enough with the offseason. There's another break coming in between. We've got 8 races left. There's another 3-week break that they're considering that part of his gardening break. So he has officially stepped back from any kind of aerodynamic development. Any meetings they have with that, he is no longer involved in. He's like totally separated, but he's still part of the team. So I guess that's like the gray area of getting around the rules of keeping him within the team, but not actually participating in the team. I'm very interested to see how Aston Martin will take his development and to literally watch how fast it will take from Aston Martin to go where they are on the grid to just skyrocket and be able to surpass Mercedes, pass Red Bull on their current trajectory and not be that mid-grid or lower grid team. Just be fighting for wins every single day. And there you have it, folks. That is the hot topics for this weekend. Let's get right into qualifying. It was a hot qualifying. It's been a hot weekend all weekend, 37 degrees Celsius trackside. This will make it slightly difficult for the drivers because of the tire degradation and just in general, when you're at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, these tires have a tendency to not have a whole lot of grip, whether they're new, whether they're used, there's a slight skating effect. It does take these tires quite a while to get into the actual proper temperature range to get the grip and to get the stability that the drivers need. And it's a perfect example when you're going into Q1, they weren't laying any rubber down on the track until 13 minutes into Q1, which is astonishingly long. Even after all the full practices, all the time on the track before qualifying even started, it still took the teams and the racers 13 minutes to get the little marbles starting to form on the grid. Now, I have no idea what's in their asphalt, what's in their tarmac. It just seemed really, really hard to break that barrier to start getting that grip, and it showed. Joe Guanyu, Valtteri Bottas, I mean, Daniel Ricciardo was having troubles. Norris was having issues. Nobody had proper grip. They were still getting super fast track times when it came to first qualifying, but they weren't blowing anybody out of the water by any stretch of the imagination. And it went so far as having issues with grip that there was a huge shock in Q1. We're just going to get right into it. Lando Norris out in Q1, went on a wide turn, didn't have time to recover because he couldn't get the grip for another fast lap, ends up exiting Q1 in 17th spot. Absolutely horrible. Absolutely just unthinkable. He's been challenging for races, being on the top spot for qualifying week after week after week, and then all of a sudden 17th spot. This really shows how these cars are really traveling and really performing on a knife edge, that one thing can go right, one thing can go wrong, and it doesn't have to be big. It can be a small change here, small change there, and then all of a sudden, you go from first to 17th. Bottom five, you've got Esteban Ocon in 20th, Joe Guanyu in 19th, Valtteri Bottas in 18th, Lando Norris in 17th, and Daniel Ricciardo, unfortunately, in 16th spot, really not helping out his future prospects by not being able to make it out of Q1. Q2 showed some surprising results. It kind of ended up being the battle of the rookies. We've got Ollie Bearman, and we also have the Argentinian Colapinto. They were showing what properly prepared and proper academy rookies can do, whether they're prepared for F1, thrown in on the spot, or have years and years of training. Really, really, really good track times. Unfortunately, Ollie Bearman does not make it out of Q2. Really disappointing for him. Granted, he did have less than a week's notice that he was driving in this just because Kevin Magnussen was suspended for points on his super license, but he just missed out of Q3 by 1/100th of a second, exactly 0.128 seconds. Super close, super disappointed in himself. He knew he left some time out on the track. Again, not necessarily his fault. The tires taking forever to catch that kind of grip, which means you don't have the speed that you need. Both Williams really, really, really hammering down the speed, especially at least a qualifying this weekend that we saw starting off. Albon and Colapinto, really just something's happening to the Williams where it's a legitimate midfield contender now. Alex Albon just wringing the neck out of the Williams. Colapinto looking very, very seasoned and very much a proper selection for a replacement for the rest of the season. I really hope he gets a seat, not next season maybe, but the season after. He's a fantastic rookie, a really good prospect for any team, especially Williams or Ferrari. He needs to be back, but really, really solid showing from both Williams. The only question is, you can be fast in qualifying, but can you be fast in the actual race? All right, let's get into the bottom five for Q2. 15th, Lance Stroll, 14th, Nico Hülkenberg, Pierre Gasly was 13th, Yuki Tsunoda was 12th, and like we talked about before, Ollie Bearman missing out by 1/100th of a second getting into Q3. I don't really think he would have been able to hang in Q3 anyways. It was time for the big boys to play. Alex Albon showing a very, very, very strong representation for Williams. He did end up finishing 10th, but still, that's not really a representation of how well he was doing this weekend. He was doing, at one point, he was second, if not first in Q3 for time. It's just that the Williams, it's not necessarily underdeveloped or underqualified. It's just that every time Williams has an upgrade, Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes, they come out with their own upgrades. It's a constant catch-up game this season for Williams. Everything was going to plan until about 2.5 minutes left in Q3, Albon's going out. So when you're watching cars before they go out, a little bit of backstory, a little bit of context. Every time the cars go back into the pit lane, they start cooling the cars down. They essentially have power tools that blow cold air into the car, into the air intake, cool the engine down, and it's filled with dry ice, including one that goes above the driver into the air intake. Well, you have to remember to take that one out. And it just happened to show that when Albon was ready to go, when he was released, either Albon was too fast on the reaction or the guy holding the, call it, cooling unit wasn't fast enough, and Alex ended up leaving with it in his car. Now, there's a couple of rules here. Normally, he would be dinged for an unsafe release. The team would be fined. He'd get some penalty points or he'd get some time added and all that kind of fun stuff. But because he stopped before he technically left the pit lane and he didn't get any assistance from the marshals and he wasn't in the way, Albon was able to complete Q3 without any further penalties, which is why he didn't exactly get, you know, higher up in the top 10. He got 10th. Just because it probably took 45 seconds to get it out. He get it off by himself. He had a bunch of dry ice on the car that he was able to get off the car. When he hit the gas, it all kind of came off. But a little embarrassing for the team. Definitely, definitely frustrating for Alex. I do believe that he would have been in the top five if that wasn't happened. And if it wouldn't have been the top five, he just would have just been outside that gate. The name of the game is speed. The driver who is able to name that game the entire qualifying 1, 2, and 3, Charles Leclerc, just on rails with that Ferrari this weekend. No missteps. For some reason, no sliding. He seemed to have a lot less issues with the track temperature and the tire temperature than anybody else. Really, really good job. Ends up being the top of the gate, or a top of qualifying 1, 2, and yes, he ends up finishing pole in top three. Let's get into your top 10 from 10th to first. 10th, Alex Albon. 9th, Kalle Pinto. 8th, Fernando Alonso. 7th, Hamilton. An okay day for Hamilton for qualifying. He was complaining about the car, the way it was handling. He said he was fighting the car a little bit and just kind of an overall frustrating weekend for him. 6th spot, Max Verstappen. We're going to come back to him in a half a second. 5, George Russell. 4, Checo Perez. 3, Carlos Sainz. And number 2 is Oscar Piastri, leaving Charles Leclerc number 1 in pole position. Max Verstappen, I don't know what Red Bull's doing with this car. They're going in the 100% opposite direction. Max complaining he's got no control in the back. He's got no grip. He's sliding. His brakes suck. Like, literally, take a checklist and see what's not wrong with the car. It would be a shorter list than what's actually working for him. They've got no more time. It's Parc Fermé after qualifying. They can tweak a few little things race day, but Red Bull really, really, really needs to figure something out before the beginning of the race, or Max can and Red Bull can and probably will kiss the Constructors and Drivers' Championships goodbye. Now that we've got qualifying out of the way, all the times have been taken, all the racers have calmed down, the cars are in Parc Fermé. It is now time for race day. It is officially the 2024 Azerbaijan Grand Prix. We're talking 20 turns, 51 laps, total distance of 6.003 kilometers, top speed of 358.3 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap 2019, our pole sitter, Charles Leclerc, in a 1:43. That time was nowhere close to being broken today. Slight comment, slight track. These cars are supposed to be faster, yet they are heavier. Okay, so generally when you go faster, you go lighter. But are they actually that fast? Some of these times that have been hanging on, like 2019, we're 5 years past 2019. You would think with the aerodynamic development, engine development, and just, you know, technological advances period, that they'd be blowing these times out of the water. There has been a couple races so far this year where the track time has come down from the race and so on and so forth, but in general, a lot of these track times are staying 5, 6, 7 years before the development actually reaches, you know, that height where you can be faster, which makes me think, is the aerodynamic development of these cars and the technology going in the right direction to actually make them faster? Maybe even with the 2026 guidelines, maybe it might be a little smart to go back, to go forward, if you know what I mean. Anyways, let's get into the race right away. And right before we even start, some grid changes. Hamilton, Ocon, pit lane start. Both of them got power unit points or parts put in, so they broke Parc Fermé. Both of them are going to start on the pit lane start. They didn't say how many parts they put in their cars. Obviously, as soon as you break Parc Fermé, no matter what, you're going to start in the pit lane. So we're starting from there. Esteban Ocon, all of a sudden, he got disqualified from qualifying. Now, I didn't necessarily notice this. He wasn't 18th. I didn't notice anything particular about when he exited qualifying, right? It's like, oh, it's just another Alpine that didn't quite make it. Well, it turned out they're calling it a fuel pump issue. That also actually meant that he didn't have enough gas in his car. So as soon as you don't have enough fuel in a car, exactly 1.7 liters in your fuel cell left, you're disqualified. The reason for that is that the stewards and the technicians that work for F1, they will take a sample of the fuel from your vehicle to make sure it meets all guidelines and regulations. Essentially, it's like checking to see if your car is on steroids. It has to be the right mixture, the right percentages, and nothing odd in that fuel. Now, this does not mean, this does not mean that Alpine was cheating, that they had something in the fuel that was illegal or not allowed. This just means that they weren't actually allowed, they couldn't test to see if there was anything in there to say that they were absolutely clean because the sample wasn't big enough. Automatic disqualification from qualifying, no points against the driver's license, no fine that I believe that goes against the team. It's just a punishment for that exact driver that you have to start at the back of the grid. That's just going to make his day even worse. I mean, Alpine is not exactly known for blowing people out of the water with their speed. I mean, they're known for blowing people out of the water because they have a tendency to hit other people, but I don't think that's going to happen today. Track temperature, again, 45 degrees Celsius in the sun. Ambient temperature was 34 degrees in Baku today. It was just a hot, hot race day, which brings into consideration what are the tires going to do. The general strategy, you don't go with softs when it's this hot. They degrade way too fast. You're going to get that speed right off the bat, but you're going to have to change tires in like 10 laps. So what's the point? You get ahead to fall behind to try to catch up. General game plan is one pit stop, either go from hards to mediums or mediums to hards. So we're going to see how the strategy actually works out today. Both Red Bulls, 3-2-1, off we go. Both Red Bulls, fantastic start. Really, really good start. Both of them up at least 2-3 spots. Max looking like he's actually going to compete this weekend. I guess he's got to be tired of losing. I'm sure they found something in the car that they could have adjusted within the rules. We're hoping he'll actually get some points and kind of defend his racing ability. First lap, first corner, Lance Stroll ends up getting a puncture on the first lap. It didn't necessarily take him out of the race, at least not exactly right then and there. But it actually was a little bit of a collision with Yuki Tsunoda. It didn't seem anything massive at the time. He did report a puncture. I mean, it was a pit stop after lap one, so it's kind of put him definitely on the back foot. Doesn't really change the race for Aston Martin today, especially for Lance Stroll. He was in it, but kind of, sort of, not really. Someone who was in it to win it right off the bat, Lando Norris, ends up going from his 17th position all the way up to 11th in less than three laps. He is definitely 100% a man on a mission. It was just, he's just passing at will. He got the grip. He's starting on hards. It seemed to be the tire that needed to be on the cars from the start to finish. Not dangerous passing, but really consistent, really determined, really, really, really good speed. So obviously Lando knows what he's doing. He's got to try to catch up to Piastri. Piastri's all the way up at the front. Will Lando be able to do this? Only time will tell. Yuki Tsunoda, lap 16, ends up being the very first DNF of the day. He is out due to side pod damage with his little collision with Lance Stroll. The side pod damage itself wasn't necessarily that bad. When you saw what had happened, it kind of accordioned a piece of the side pod up. It was, call it maybe a brand new pencil width wide and about 2 inches high. It looked to be that the original, but because of the speed and the downforce and the G forces that are associated with each turn in any race, the hole just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger until eventually you could literally fit your entire head and then some into the side pod of Yuki Tsunoda's car. And that was his day. Very, very frustrating for Yuki. He needs the points. He did sign the contract with V-Card for the next couple of seasons, so his spot is safe, but V-Card's in that position where they need the points to get more sponsorship money and potentially get new upgrades. So not exactly a fantastic day for Yuki Tsunoda. Oscar Piastri finally passes Leclerc. It's back and forth between those two. Leclerc, Piastri, 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 Leclerc. Piastri is really showing his maturity when the race is not given to him. I do believe it was still the wrong decision to give Piastri the win, a couple of races to go from Lando Norris, but it kind of lit a fire under Piastri. Now, Piastri could have gone out and driven ridiculously, recklessly, like kind of the rookie that he is, show his inexperience, but instead he's got that team around him. He's got the maturity where he's pressuring Leclerc at the right times. He's making Leclerc use at the tires, make mistakes, and yet being mature enough not to push too hard, not to make mistakes, not to take himself off the driving line, because let's be honest, Carlos Sainz wasn't really pressuring those two. Perez was kind of hanging out and forth waiting for his opportunity. So essentially it was just those two going back and forth. And because of the pressure, because of the intensity, Piastri does pass Leclerc on lap 20. It was a dive bomb move from to the inside, back to the outside. Leclerc tried to, you know, he tried his best to stop Piastri from passing him. It was not happening. Piastri had him dead to rights and made a fantastic move, a very veteran move, and definitely a move that I do anticipate seeing Piastri doing more in the future. I'm going to give him a 50-50 success rate at this time. He's 100% success rate at this time. He's done it. It works. He's going to do it again. I'm pretty sure it's going to come back to bite him in the ass at some point. But in this case, Leclerc didn't anticipate it. McLaren didn't anticipate it. The commentators didn't anticipate it. Nobody knew it was coming except for him, which is the sign of a very intelligent driver. You don't give away your secrets if you don't have to. Meanwhile, you'd expect at this point that Max would go from sixth to third or to second, just really, really challenged. Unfortunately, in Baku for Max, again, not exactly the best race for him, period. Max was stuck in a DRS train for 10 plus laps. Did he actually take part in this race again for like the fourth race in a row? No, he did not. It was not exactly a fantastic race for him. He still finishes in the top 10, but he's not getting the points that he absolutely needs. On the flip side, someone who's getting the points that both him and his team needs, Alex Albon. After 23 laps, he's up to fourth. He's gone from 10th, he's gone to fourth. Now, it's not just because of the pit stops. Pit stops are 23 seconds long. He's got the pace on the hearts. His team has worked out the strategy that's going to work best for him. He's got great management, tire management, fantastic pace. He's using that experience that he's gained over the years to, again, push the car like Piastri, but ease off at the same time. He knows when to go. He knows when to stay. He's really becoming a force to reckon with. I do see him gaining more points for Williams and for himself by the end of the season and the developmental direction they're going. I think 2025 is going to be the breakout year for Williams and for Alex Albon. As we move on into the race, we're talking like lap 47. Lance Stroll finally ends up not finishing the race. No word yet on why. The car looked fine. It didn't look like he picked up a whole lot of damage. He did pick up some shrapnel from the course. It is a street course, rock chips, you know, that kind of stuff. And nothing huge. He didn't hit anybody. He didn't run into the wall. He just ended up not finishing the race. Again, I would love to figure out why. This is something that Aston Martin's going to take into consideration into the future. Why the car didn't fail. He's going to be taking notes. They're going to hand over this massive binder and just give it to Adrian Newey going, help us fix this, please. We are not doing what we are supposed to do. Please help. And Adrian Newey's going to be like, all right, here's my project for the absolute rest of my career. Checo Perez, really great race, top three. He's finally showing what he needs to do in Red Bull. He's finally going to pick up the points that the team needs, that he needs. Because even though he signed a two-year contract extension, Red Bull is definitely not afraid to pay out a driver and kick him to the curb if they're not doing what they're supposed to. Red Bull will demote him to VCAR any time that he is not fulfilling his contract in an intelligent way. Remember that part. It's a little bit of foreshadowing coming up. Lap 50, Perez sights. So 51 laps, okay? This is how many laps that they have to race. 51. We are on lap 50, the penultimate lap. Piastri, he's off in the distance, all right? Piastri is holding his own, and all he has to do is literally don't fuck up. Don't hit anybody. Don't touch a wall. Don't touch a curb. Take it nice and slow. In the meantime, all of a sudden, Carlos Sainz has caught up to both Leclerc and Perez. So here's the situation. Leclerc finally ends up passing Checo just before a right to left or left to right. Left-hand turn that goes into a straightaway. Okay. Leclerc's finally coming up to this, which means Carlos Sainz is behind Checo technically. catches a slipstream, ends up passing him, going wide into the corner. So now close your eyes and picture this. Leclerc is in front. Back right is Carlos Sainz. And then bottom left is Checo Perez. Kind of like a backwards L. You know how I said Perez was doing, you know, intelligent things? That he was working with the team? Yeah. I think that what's about to happen is probably a 90-10 split. 90% Checo's fault, 10% Carlos Sainz's fault. Okay? So, Leclerc takes off. He's going. What Perez is trying to do is he's trying to catch the slipstream behind Leclerc, as is Carlos Sainz. Now, Carlos Sainz is ahead of Checo Perez by over 3/4 of a car length. So, by the rules, Carlos Sainz has the right to move from right to left to give himself a little bit of space against the wall and to catch more of the slipstream behind Leclerc than Perez does. Perez has the entire left-hand side of the runway or the road still to go that he can use. Carlos Sainz is turning over or moving from left, right to left. He does not know where Checo Perez is. Okay, that's the 10% right there. Checo, instead of going a little bit left and not making contact, ends up going a little bit to the right, and Checo's right or front right-hand tire makes contact with Carlos Sainz's rear left tire. And it's not just a little bit of a contact. It's contact enough where the tires lock and it throws both Sainz and Perez straight left on a straightaway into the wall. All Checo had to do, he had the pace, he had the inside lane. All he had to do was go a little bit left, and I believe that he would have been able to pass Carlos Sainz. Okay, Carlos had to slow down a little bit because he's close to the wall. He had to turn a little bit to the left. He wanted to catch that straightaway. It was dirty track, dirty air. He had to slow down just a little bit, a fraction. Okay, Perez had the entire left-hand side of the fucking street beside him. He had the opportunity to not make contact. But what did Perez do? He goes a little bit to the right and then immediately be like, no, what happened? And blames Carlos Sainz for what had happened, taking them both out of the race. Absolutely fucking demolishing both cars. And it's Checo's fault. You give Checo the opportunity to make points for the team, to help out, to show that he is actually worth being on the team, and he pisses it away by stupid, stupid decisions. It's his own fault. Christian Horner was trying to say, well, it's more of a Checo fault. It goes to the stewards. They call it a racing incident, which means each party is at fault to a certain extent. Now, obviously, the stewards and the FIA do not give percentages, 50-50, 70-30, 90-10, whatever the case may be. They do not give percentages. They call it a racing incident because both drivers took part and added to this incident. Everybody who took a look at the video, I do not care if you're a Ferrari fan, I don't care if you're a Red Bull fan, an F1 fan, or you just don't care. It was Checo's fault 100%. What in the fuck are you doing to your team? Because Checo got taken out, because essentially Carlos Sainz took out Checo Perez because of the collision, it is official because Piastri ends up getting first, Norris ends up getting fourth. Verstappen's the only one left in Red Bull to finish the race. He gets top five, he gets fifth, okay? Net fifth, he should have been seventh, but two cars get kicked out. He goes up two. Because of what Checo did, because of what he does, because he is a useless second driver to Red Bull, all of a sudden, Red Bull gives up the constructors' lead and they are now second. Not only are they second, they are now 20 points behind McLaren with 7 races left. In my opinion, and yes, I am not an F1 expert. Sometimes I like to think I am. I'm not a racer. I'm not a technician. This I know. But as a fan, as a passionate fan, as someone who watches and pays attention to the races in great detail, Red Bull needs to get rid of Checo. Pay him out. Get him out of your seat. Replace him with Sonoda. Replace him with Daniel Ricciardo. Give them the opportunity to actually make points for the fucking team. They can't do worse than Checo. I mean, hell, crash in Q3 would be the same as Checo. Crash during the race, same as Checo. Make top 10, barely help out your team, same as Checo. He is not helping the team. Get rid of him right now. And that's how the race ends. It ends on a red flag or yellow flag. Piastri, granted he was a couple of seconds ahead, just cruises to his very first actual non-team assisted win. This win he absolutely 100% deserved. With my rant being over, let's go through the top 10. This is your winners from 10th to 1st. 10th, Ollie Bearman picks up 1 point for Haas. Then Hamilton in 9th. Colapinto in 8th. Albon in 7th. Fernando Alonso in 6th. Verstappen in 5th. Norris in 4th. Russell in 3rd. Leclerc in 2nd. And Oscar Piastri in 1st. Constructors Championships. Yeah, this sucks. All right. McLaren is now officially the number one, is in the lead for the Constructors' Championships with 476 points. Red Bull drops to second with 456. Ferrari's in third with 425. Not that far behind Red Bull. They can catch them before the end of the season. Mercedes is in fourth with 309 points, a massive drop difference to Aston Martin in fifth with 82 points. Red Bull is, or the RB car is in sixth with 34 points. Haas is in 7th with 29 points. Williams jumps Alpine. They are now 8th with 16 points. Alpine drops to 9th with 13 points. And Kicksalba is still holding up the basement with 0. Way to be consistent, guys. Drivers' Championships, nothing really changes. Max Verstappen is still 1st with 313 points. Lando Norris is in 2nd with 254 points. Leclerc is in 3rd with 235 points. Oscar Piastri is in 4th with 222 points. Carlos Sainz is in 5th with 148. Hamilton's in 6th with 166. George Russell's in 7th with 143 points. Tied with Checo Perez for 8th spot. Only reason why George Russell is higher on the points, like in the 7th spot, even though he's tied with Checo Perez, is because he finished higher in the last race, equaling the points, so they give him the spot. Fernando Alonso is 9th with 24 points, and Lance Stroll tops out the top 10 with 22 points. I mean, Lando Norris goes from essentially, because he goes from 17th to 4th. Amazing race from Lando Norris. Really, really good job. We got some history being made at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Ollie Bearman. So here's the stats. He's had two replacement starts. He did one race for Ferrari at the beginning of the season when Carlos Sainz was out with appendicitis. Now he's his second start with the Haas team as a replacement for Kevin Magnussen. He has done two different teams. And he has scored points on his first appearance with two different teams. So he's driven for two teams, and his very first race for those two teams, he's ended up scoring points. He's the very first one in history, which, I mean, it's fantastic. This shows that Ollie Bearman is the right pick for any team that decides to pick him, as well as Colapinto is the first Argentinian to get points in F1 since the early or mid-90s. Congratulations to Francisco Colapinto. Some really good history that was made today. It was the bright spot to a really bad, well, not bad, but controversial, I should say, Grand Prix. Story of the race, like I said, Ollie Bearman making history, setting himself for a really, really good future in F1. Oscar Piastri, McLaren does not need to give him wins. He can definitely get the wins on his own more than what some people think he deserves. He's showing his experience. In my opinion, he will overtake Lando Norris as the number one driver, if not this season, then next season. And Max Verstappen, I don't know what the fuck happened to Red Bull today. Yeah, he got 5th. He gets more points, which is great. Still behind Lando Norris. Still can't figure out the car. Red Bull is just on a downward spiral. They've already lost the Constructors' Championships on the trajectory that each team is going. McLaren is just going to take off and win the Constructors this year. Red Bull will be stoked and very excited if they get 2nd in Constructors, if not 3rd, because, God, the rest of the team, the rest of the pack is just right behind them. Like, Ferrari can legitimately catch them. 31 points behind them. That's a good weekend. That could be Singapore. That could be next weekend. And all of a sudden, Red Bull's down to 3rd. So it's going to be a very, very interesting next race. And yes, the next race is the Singapore Grand Prix, September 20th to 22nd. Another street circuit at night. A very intense, very technical course. I like this one. It's not nearly as boring as Baku. Definitely not nearly as boring as some of the ones in Europe. It is very early for us here in Canada if we want to watch it. The weekend starts Thursday morning at 5:30 with the weekend warm-up. Friday, full practice 1 and 2 respectively at 3:30 and 7 a.m. Saturday, full practice is at 3. The pre-qualifying show is at 6 a.m. Qualifying Saturday morning at 7 a.m. The pre-race show Sunday at 5 o'clock with the race to start at 6 our time. If you're anything like me, prepare to lose some sleep because I do not want to miss any action that happens on that track this weekend at all, because we could see some more title changes, some more point differential from here on out. If you love math and you love those statistics, it's definitely going to be your year. Well, folks, that is your Baku roundup for the 2024 season. Leave a comment. Tell me what you think. Do you think Max Verstappen will be able to hold off and win the Drivers' Championships? Will he lose it? Will Red Bull be able to win back the Constructors and pass McLaren, or is McLaren really just going to run away with this? But as always, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us on F101. I'd like to send out a massive, massive thank you. And until next time, keep the wheels spinning, keep the adrenaline pumping. We'll talk to you next time.